U.S. Forest Service downtown, Pa Di Thai, The Meadow, Salt and Straw, and way too many brew pubs to list. These have a couple of things in common. One is that they're all in Portland, and they are contributors to a small contribution, because there are so many more, to the Portland brand. The whole world, the whole country looks to Portland for a number of things. Our food scene, our cocktail and beer scene, our design sensibility, and the sustainability of this city. The other thing that they have in common is that when they built those places, the aesthetic was reclaimed wood. It is a main component of almost every single new build in the city, and we are building more and more. Large developments are happening, mixed use, retail down below. It is something that we're going to see more and more of. You know, reclaimed material is a beautiful material. It's an aesthetic, and it's very, very popular. Really, you know, the world comes to Portland because of Portland. You may or may not know this, but we're big in Japan. We're big in Europe. We're big in Australia. We're big in Brazil. Really, the whole world looks to us.
By the way, one of the ways we know that is the single best travel guide I've ever seen about Portland is the Japanese guide.
Yes.
And in fact, it's been so successful here that they're about to translate it into English so they can use it domestically as a travel guide.
Right. And Korean.
Yeah.
There's now a Korean edition.
Right. Chinese next, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend who is working on a project called Ride the Yellow, which is to promote the Yellow Line and the businesses along the Yellow Line, and a number of them, which is the Rebuilding Center, Salvage Works, a place called Beam and Anchor, is part of that Portland design brand, and all of that is reclaimed. So, you know, it's a brand that is being exported, and reclaimed materials are being exported. You know, we do work in the Bay Area, in California, in Seattle. We ship materials around the country, and so what it is it's a product, and it's a growing business. So I really believe that this program will, you know, help build the capacity for deconstruction contractors, and I do believe that, you know, the time frame proposed is necessary to really to help the industry grow. You know, I believe that those incentives should go to deconstruction contractors, to training, but also possibly to help them build their capacity a bit, buy some equipment, that sort of thing. Because really, once the cost of a deconstruction becomes the same as the cost of a demolition, everyone's work is done.
Yeah,
it will be the given. So thank you all very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Thanks very much for coming.
You bet. Thanks.
Thank you. Brandon, welcome.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is Brandon Spencer Hartle. I'm here today representing Restore Oregon. I've had the opportunity to speak with you more in the last 3 months and the last 10 years combined, so it's been good. Today, I served on the Deconstruction Advisory Group, so I'm here to talk about that experience. I'm here today to support the resolution in front of you regarding establishing a framework for increasing the percentage of demolished materials that are salvaged for reuse. I've appreciated the fast-paced conversations to arrive at today's proposal, in no small part thanks to Sean Wood at BPS. I ask that the Council consider exploring a pragmatic program that would phase in disincentives as well to traditional demolition, because only a minimal amount of funding will be available for the proposed incentive program if we want to substantially increase the amount of waste diverted from the landfill. I personally believe it will be necessary to implement additional programs that dissuade property owners from choosing the path of mechanical demolition. Demolitions generally, and mechanical demolition specifically, have external costs. One of those costs is the loss of embodied energy when materials are sent to the landfill. For example, Portland's typical demolished house is 1,200 square feet and generates 115 pounds of demolition waste per square feet. That's about 138,000 pounds of waste per house. In terms of weight, landfilling the 350 houses that applied for demolition permits over the last year is the equivalent of 438 million aluminum cans, 33 million glass beer bottles, or 1.5 billion pieces of copy paper. In order to best manage the waste stream generated by our city's recent increase in demolitions, I ask that you help foster deconstruction by phasing in disincentives to pair with the incentive proposal. A thoughtfully designed and gradually implemented landfill tax on the demolition of buildings that could otherwise be reused or salvaged would allow Portland to recoup some of the external costs of demolition and direct the marketplace towards deconstruction and salvage. I want to close by saying that I very much appreciate Council's recent attention to the issues of neighborhood change. You've made tremendous strides in the past few months to address many of the concerns that historic preservationists and neighborhood advocates have brought before you. I'll close by just saying that I hope that you support the resolution in front of you, and I hope you look at it as one more step in the multi-step process of addressing Portland's growing pains right now, and that you consider a next step after today of looking at disincentives to mechanical demolition. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Questions for these folks? Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
That's others? All who signed up.
Okay. I want to get staff to come back up. I've got some questions, and other council members might have questions as well. Certainly heard some interest in moving faster here, which, frankly, I'm pretty sympathetic to. So I want to hear council reactions to that. Also want to let people know that I've already started asking staff to prepare some policy options for council on the subject of disincentives for traditional demolition. So appreciate Brandon bringing that up. That is a logical next step, so that we try to change that equation as well. So we want people, when they absolutely, positively must have to demolish a structure, to do so through deconstruction. But we also want to reduce the number of structures that are subject to that, and raise the cost in terms of penalties for deconstructing or demolishing a structure that has value. So I'm very interested in that piece of the equation as well, and I think that's a logical next step. But what do you think about the suggestion, maybe that we come back more quickly than a year from now? Give us some reactions to what you heard in terms of testimony here about how can we go a little faster, even if we stick at least in the short term with the incentive approach. When is the logical break point where we say, you know, okay, as we just did with commercial building energy use, now you have to do it. We've been through that cycle on that issue. So, Michael, your thoughts about that might be particularly relevant, given that you were the architect of that transition. So say more.
I think there's certainly a parallel. And I think you heard through the testimony there's a lot of agreement about direction. The question is how far, how fast. And, you know, again, from the testimony, the Deconstruction Advisory Group discussed exactly this question, and there was strong consensus to move forward quickly with a pilot, mixed opinions about whether and how soon to make that mandatory. And so that's what led us to the recommendation in front of you. I'll defer to Sean. I think it's certainly possible that we could come back sooner with a report on how it's going and options for you to consider at that time. We'll have a little bit less information to work with, because we won't have had the program in place for as long. Sean, jump in here.
So I would echo that and echo what Shane said earlier. So, you know, the question was posed, how quickly could the deconstruction industry adapt to a quicker timeline? You could do it, but with growing pains. And so I think, maybe some clogged ears would probably happen. But with what Michael mentioned in terms of the pilot would just be less informative. We'll have kind of just gotten off the ground with it, so its ability to inform what those recommendations are for next steps will be somewhat limited.
So is a dumb question on my part. I should know the answer to this kind of question before I ask it, but is there a rhythm? I mean, obviously there is to construction. Is there a rhythm over the course of the year in terms of if we have about, on average, a demolition a day, is the peak in the summer.
Exactly. So we would miss that kind of peak construction window. But if we're talking about $50,000 of money to use as incentives, and we're seeing 20 projects a year, even the ones that happen on the kind of the off seasons are still going to be available to take advantage of an incentive. So we'd still have some, but the majority would probably occur more in the late spring, summer.
Here, can I follow up on that for
please,
a
yeah.
I was intrigued, although not persuaded, by an argument someone raised. I want to give you a chance to respond. And that is that in crafting an incentive plan where we create an incentive for folks to use deconstruction, we are actually creating an incentive, further incentive for demolitions and altering in some way the market. And I'm not persuaded just at face value with that, but I want to give you a chance to respond.
You want to take it, Sean?
I'll staff or the person that mentioned it?
We'll give reaction.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in your opinion than predicting their opinion.
I would say that the decision to demolish a structure and build a new structure is made well before any consideration of how the building is going to come down. And so in the grand scheme of the budget for a new house and looking at clearing the site with an existing house, that difference in cost, any kind of incentive that we're going to be providing, I don't believe would push the needle towards having someone decide whether or not they want to demolish a building and build a new house.
And I'd add there, as a couple of the folks noted, it does, the initial cost to deconstruct is higher than to demolish. We want more developers, contractors to get accustomed to seeing the value proposition there, and so the incentives are to get them to try it. We think the net cost, especially as the industry matures, is going to come down, and hopefully we wipe out that the premium. But it is there for sure as a perception, and in some cases as a reality.
I'm also curious, we have different approaches to incentivizing behavior that we talk about at this body. We have, for example, waived system development fee charges on accessory dwelling units or certain fees on accessory dwelling units as a way of getting people to both do them within a legal framework and to reduce the regulatory burden. What are other examples where we've offered a financial inducement rather than removed a barrier?
So we have a pretty long history in terms of energy efficiency and also in the early days of getting the green building sector off the ground, of providing grants. I think Commissioner Saltzman certainly recalls the Green Investment Fund, where we're helping an industry that's emerging broaden and bring new firms, new kinds of projects to do those practices. I think there's a pretty strong parallel here. And we saw a lot of success. A lot of the Portland's list of LEED certified, LEED platinum projects is incredibly long because the industry figured out a way to provide that and have it be competitive in the marketplace. Some incentives early on helped get us there.
So you have a toolkit that includes carrots and sticks, but you have a history of using the sort of carrots as a way of building a broader foundation of support for the changes that you're trying to get built into the system.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
If some of the effort is going to go into incentives to actually do deconstruction, and if some of the effort is going to go into training and capacity building, obviously the training and capacity building can start right away, right? So you're not dependent on a project coming along that's willing to take the incentive and do something different in order to train people. So those are a little bit severable in terms of when things can start to make a difference, if I understand the program correctly.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So there is funding for that capacity building and education part as well as the incentive to the developers?
Correct.
And I noticed that Metro is talking about a more regional approach. What might they be doing in terms of incentives versus requirements versus education and support?
So BPS staff works really closely with Metro staff on the subject of deconstruction as well as actually accessory dwelling units, and I've spoken with Metro staff about the possibility of providing additional funds for this pilot program. I think the beauty of that is that we get to take the work that we've done within the city and share the love with other jurisdictions. So in addition to the direct members that were on the advisory group, we had interest from both Clackamas County and Washington County, as well as folks from the Seattle, Puget Sound area. So if we were to take a regional approach to this, we're just, you know, contractors don't necessarily work just in the city of Portland. They work, you know, they work in other boundaries as well. So a regional approach to this is just going to be that much more successful.
And how much longer does it take to deconstruct versus demolish?
So it's really going to depend on a lot of factors, but if you were to try and average it down, you know, a demolition takes 1 to 2 days. A deconstruction could take 5 to 10 days. It's really going to depend on site access. There's issues like slope, where putting a piece of machinery on a steep site may be very difficult or even impossible, in which case the deconstruction project's going to be a favorable one in terms of the time and probably the cost.
But presumably after you've demolished, there's a certain amount for cleanup as well, as was referenced with all the dust and other debris lying around.
So I'm sorry, I'm not following the question.
Well, does the 1 to 2 days for the demolition, does that include cleaning up the site thereafter?
So pretty much immediately they'll start prepping the site for new construction. So they'll fill in the basement if that needs to happen, and then also remove the foundation. So it's a pretty quick process when you're talking about demolition. The deconstruction is still going to require an excavator to come in and pull out a foundation and backfill.
I can attest to that. The bungalow next to my house that was demolished, I would be surprised if it took 2 days.
Yeah, it can be done in a number of hours. there's videos out there that show it coming down pretty quick.
Well, I hear a strong community interest, and I share it in trying to move faster on some elements of this. I guess I would like to suggest that we amend the resolution to have you come back in January with a report and next steps, even if we haven't been through a full construction cycle on seeing how incentives are working. Because, again, there's some other policy tools that may be coming forward, will be coming forward for the council to consider and that may be adopted. I think I hear in the community a really strong and fervent interest in us moving quickly on this, and the pace of change and the pace of demolition that's going with that change is worrisome to a lot of people, including us. So I'd be interested in propose that we amend the last line of the resolution instead of September 2016 to come back and report to us on program status and next steps in January of 2016, we've got a second to that motion. So any further discussion of that amendment? So let's act on that amendment, see if there's any other changes the council wants to make to the resolution. Roll call on accepting that amendment.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate the amendment, Mayor, and also the testimony. That does give the industry 6 months and maybe some more of the $50,000 and money could be put into capacity building, because I intend to signal my intent to try to go further, faster. And I appreciate the amendment. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. And any other revisions or recommendations from council before we act on the resolution in front of us? Okay, then let's take a roll call vote on the resolution.
Fish.
Thanks to the Planning and Sustainability Commission for bringing this forward. Mayor, thank you for your deep concern on this issue. We've been talking about growing pains, and I live in a neighborhood that's going through some growing pains, sort of Grant Park, Beaumont, Wilshire, Hollywood area. And there's a lot happening at the same time that's impacting quality of life, traffic, noise, demolitions. In my neighborhood, apparently, it's now generally the view of anybody on a 2- or 4-wheel vehicle that a stop sign is optional. But there's other things going on, and it's having an impact. And, you know, once upon a time, we made a bargain that we would focus density in places where we could absorb it, and we would try to preserve the kind of character of some of our particularly traditional R5 neighborhoods. And it's a balance, and we're in the process of trying to strike the right balance. We have an urban growth boundary. We're required to accept density, and we understand that. But we're looking at ways of doing it that also doesn't unduly infringe on people's quality of life. So I think this has been a good discussion. I've heard some very good ideas. I think we're raising the public awareness about a lot of these issues, which is part of the essential process. I like the phase in of starting with carrots before you get to sticks. And as a practical matter, it's always better if you can get buy-in and get people to participate because you get a higher compliance rate and you get a more thoughtful compliance rate. We don't want people deconstructing these homes in such a way that my friends at the Rebuilding Center can't find anything what's been deconstructed that has a market value because it was done in a shoddy way or not a thoughtful way. So I appreciate this conversation, and I appreciate the mayor's amendment, and I'll vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, thank you, Mayor, and Bureau of Planning and Sustainability for bringing forward this pilot. I think it's something that I look forward to being very successful, and there's so much about deconstruction that makes sense to me. And I think to us from a collective point of view in terms of creating more jobs, creating fewer risk to public health and the environment in the process. And so I just think it's a very good thing. And hopefully the industry will take advantage of these incentives and we'll see it grow more widespread. Aye.
Novick.
Quite frequently, when people in our neighborhoods come to us with concerns about what's happening in their neighborhoods, I'm sympathetic to the concerns, but I have to say that my sympathy is tempered with concerns about climate disruption and carbon emissions. For example, when people come and say, I don't like this apartment building without parking going up in my neighborhood, I can understand the disruption that that causes, but on the other hand, people in apartments use less carbon than people who live in houses. And when we have a collection of people living in a smaller space, then a grocery store springs up and people are able to walk to the grocery store instead of drive. And if we require parking with every apartment, then we're in effect encouraging people to drive and emit more carbon. So that doesn't mean we can't figure out ways to address the concerns, but there's this constant balancing act with carbon emissions. So it's actually very nice to have people in our neighborhoods coming with concerns about something happening in their neighborhoods where one of the arguments for their proposal is it will reduce carbon emissions. And according to BPS, deconstruction as opposed to demolition takes the equivalent of 2 cars off the road for a year for each house. So that's one major reason why I'm particularly sympathetic to this suggestion and really appreciative of the mayor's efforts and BPS's efforts and all of the community activist efforts. Thank you all. Aye.
Fritz?
I support the approach for many reasons. One, the committee worked very hard to come up with it. Thanks to Nancy Thorington from Development Services, as well as to my staff working with Planning and Sustainability, the mayor's staff, Jackie Dingfelder and others, and indeed your great work, Michael and Sean. It's a good recommendation. And also it sounds like the capacity is not quite there yet to be able to require that deconstruction rather than demolition. I certainly would like to get there sooner rather than later for the reasons that Commissioner Novick just stated, that it meshes much better with our whole climate action plan and with our values as neighbors to do deconstruction as the normal thing to do in Portland. It's another way that keeping Portland weird is actually keeping Portland a good thing. And to the extent that we can get there quickly, I would like to see that. So thanks very much to the Development Review Advisory Committee and Mary Helen's leadership of it. It's telling that there isn't a storm of opposition. I'm sure that we'll have a robust discussion when we come back with considering mandatory deconstruction. And that says it should be. I'm sure we can get there. And I very much appreciate the Neighbors United for Reform and your constructive approach, no pun intended, to change the way development happens, knowing that development is going to happen. Let's do it in the best way possible. Thank you very much. And thank you for your leadership, Mayor, on this. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I want to thank the council for thoughtful discussion. I hope what you hear, those of you who are concerned about this issue, is there's a strong shared interest here and strong shared values that we're trying to express in policy and regulation and incentives. and that we hear and share the sense of urgency. I want to thank you, Michael and Sean and Lisa Kane and Jackie Dingfelder and others who worked hard to get this discussion before the council now and more to come. As I mentioned, I'm interested in working on the disincentive and taxation side of this issue as well as on the regulatory and incentive side of this issue to send an even stronger signal about keeping houses that are worth keeping. I was talking earlier this morning about, you know, one of the things about Portland that we don't necessarily brag about in those tourism books. We might brag about the restaurants. We might brag about the urban growth boundary and the great downtown, and there's sort of an obligatory trip where people come to Portland to study the city. But one thing they sometimes fail to notice is that we've got just mile after mile after mile of great old streets with great old houses. And most cities have a few neighborhoods like that, but we've got miles of that. And having worked in cities all over the country, you know, in the last 10 years who were trying to revitalize their downtowns the way ours has been, I noticed that they might have a few such neighborhoods. And it's such a treasure. And there's a lot of support for that architectural resource and for that way of life that we feel is under attack now with this amazing wave of change that's upon us and I think is only going to get stronger. So I hope what we all hear is there's a lot of agreement about the need to be serious about that and to move quickly. And that's why I'm glad we changed the timetable a little bit and obviously going to keep tasking the Bureau and others in our city staff to help us prepare options for us as a community to consider. This is, I think, again, a great piece of work. I want to thank the Deconstruction Advisory Group. We ask a lot of volunteers in this process, and some people with a lot of walking around knowledge came together and did good work for us in a hurry, so thank you for doing that. It just occurred to me while we were actually having this discussion this afternoon that it was actually 40 years ago this summer that I started helping my father and mom build a house. And it was a house that was built on the ruins of an old stone mill where we actually logged timber on the property and milled the posts and beams that became the structure of the house. But then the floor of the house was 150-year-old heart pine that had been salvaged out of a factory in Lignum, Virginia. It's 3 inches thick, milled down to 1.5 inches thick flooring that we screwed down and pegged at great cost to knees and hands, but the beauty of that old material reused was part of the joy of that house. So if we do this right, we do it seldom. We do it in a way that that respects the neighborhood around it, and then we reuse the materials in a thoughtful way. And there are people here in this room that do that every day. And we appreciate you, and we want you to do a lot more of it. So thank you all for this good work so far. More to come. Aye. Thank you all, and we're recessed until tomorrow at 2:00.
Mayor?
Yes.
Since now we're recessed. Is everyone